The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your weekly Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. I've got two lovely chaps with me today. Jacob Whitehead's here. Hello, Jacob.
Hello. How's it going?
It's not bad. How are you, sir? You okay? You keeping well?
Yeah, I am.
Good. Don't want to expand on that at all. Just that's it.
I'm a bit full. I ate too much yogurt for breakfast, but otherwise, like, in spirit, I'm good, but, like, my stomach's not great.
That's where you're going wrong, mate. You're eating yogurt for breakfast instead of actual breakfast food.
Too much yogurt. That's everything that's wrong with the world today, isn't it, Taylor? Come on, back me up on this. That's just wrong.
No.
Too much yogurt.
It's ridiculous. Chris Woff's just raised his eyebrows somewhere, hasn't he, and thought, what's
I mean, I like
no
yogurt. I mean, I really like yogurt. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with yogurt. I'm not having a go at yogurt. There are other dairy and non-dairy-based products available, but too much yogurt. I mean, it's just wrong. It's wrong, Jacob. You're wrong.
I had one of those big tub ones of Greek yogurt, and I reckon it's probably two-thirds empty now.
Wow.
It's a big one, a £2.25 one.
I think of all the foods that it's quite easy to eat too much of, I think yogurt's probably quite high up the list, isn't it? Quite easy to eat too much yogurt, isn't it?
Sneaks up on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Slips down so quickly.
Oh, dear. George Calkins here as well. George, how are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm suitably depressed, having read Jacob's match piece from yesterday. Suitably mediocre.
Hmm.
But otherwise, I'm okay. I'm going to start by sending a message of love to Pat. Don't know if she'll be listening, but if she is, I just want to send her lots of love. But yeah, I'm okay, thank you. And how are you, Taylor?
I'm all right. I'm not too bad at all. I'm actually in our nation's capital right now in London. But of course, being a Northern Ireland, I'm in North London.
Oh, so that's London's fashionable London district.
That's the one, yeah.
Good,
you know it,
yeah.
You know it well.
In fact, that means I'm the only Northeasterner on this call.
That's true.
Newcastle turning into Man U all of a sudden.
Wow.
Yeah. Geographically, we are all over the place here. And speaking of all over the place, a bit of a first half horror show, quite up with it nearly being Halloween, at Stamford Bridge. An anxiety-inducing Newcastle defence gave Cole Palmer, yes, that's Cole Palmer, the freedom of West London. George, that first half, it wasn't great, was it? Anthony Gordon omitted from the squad, of course. Coaching staff decided not to start him, a bit of a problem with the groin, but Newcastle weren't great, were they, at the start?
No. I mean, I think if we're talking about Cole Palmer, I think we have to talk about how extraordinary that pass was. Blimey, what a player he is. I know that we're a Newcastle podcast, but it's very difficult to watch a game like that yesterday without expressing huge admiration for where he is as a player. I mean, that ball he played for Chelsea's first goal, having had his own goal disallowed, rightly disallowed for offside, I mean, it was astonishing. I'm not sure that ball is defendable. Are you? I mean, I just...
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Just beautiful.
And it was tempting for Fabian Scheer, that pass, wasn't it? It was sort of like, come on, just come across. It's fine. Everything's going to be all right if you just come across and try and defend this.
Yeah.
And he did, and he was left in dust, you know. He is so good. So good.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant and very difficult to defend. It took Newcastle a while to get going, and I think when that goal went in, the concern would be that it'll be followed by another one and another one, and you wouldn't have been able to argue very much about that. But they did mount a kind of spirited recovery. I mean, yeah, but in those early moments, it was pandemonium.
That opening 20 minutes, Jacob, a nerve-jangling spectacle for the travelling fans, and Eddie Howe set us up in familiar fashion.
Gordon aside, I think it was probably the 11 you'd have expected. I suppose he only really had so many choices on the right. I think the main problem was, I mean, I've spoke about it in my match pieces, sort of their struggles in midfield in terms of defence, receiving enough cover, and that led to both Palmer's disallowed goal, it led to Chelsea's second goal. It's been sort of a debate about whether the defence, with sort of the substitutions it has, is setting up too deep rather than too high, and here that I still thought they were decently high during the game itself, but it just led to so many gaps for Palmer or for Jackson to drop deep. One centre-back would be drawn out and Chelsea would be away.
Yeah, the movement between Palmer and Jackson was really good. They were playing off each other and not necessarily playing the ball to each other, but they were pulling each other around, and the positional play was great, wasn't it? It was good to watch for Chelsea fans.
Just didn't matter. It was a good football here.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, but Jacob's right. I mean, I think, you know, it's like you look at midfield and, you know, thankfully Chris isn't here to talk sixes and eights and all the rest of it. But it's not numbers that are a problem for Newcastle. It's question marks. And I think there's that question mark is just right across the midfield.
Yeah.
Saw this last season. Certainly, you know, obviously the middle of last season, there was no choice about who to play because of injuries. But start of last season, that idea of where Tonali plays, where does he fit in when he plays with Bruno? We know that he's a fabulous footballer, but at the minute there's just no balance in midfield, or there's not the right balance. And the problem with that is that, you know, midfield obviously is a you know, is an area of the team in and of itself. But what happens in midfield also then has a knock-on effect to what happens behind and what happens in front. I mean, I know that's a statement of the obvious, but it's all about partnerships. You know, if you've got Tonali on the right, then there's a knock-on effect to whoever's playing behind, whoever's playing in front. And those question marks infiltrate their way around the rest of the team. And obviously, if you have no Anthony Gordon in top form, you know that he's going to press. He's going to press hard. He's going to run all day. No surprise that the left-hand side of the team then looks stronger with him in that position, and that things then change if it's Harvey Barnes instead of him. And I'm just using that as an example. But, I mean, the way that I would sort of encapsulate yesterday is that there's a lot of moments in that game that where Newcastle actually look okay, but there's no sense of completeness anywhere in that team. And questions.
They were just played through so easily, and maybe it's the sort of the location of the pitch or of the press box at Chelsea. You're very low down, a bit like you are at St James's Park, and you feel level with it. And it just seemed so many cases where it was just one turn which set him through to midfield, or one pass. There wasn't a sense, like Newcastle's goal, which come to like brilliant goal, but you sense how they had to work really, really hard to cut Chelsea open. Yeah. It wasn't the case the other way around at all. Chilinton and Tonali, yes, they're playing as number eight, but they haven't this season produced the amount of attacking output to justify not being there for the defensive stuff, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Joel Linton appeared to have license to cause havoc among Chelsea's defence, didn't he? But it was the mad axe murderers at the back who were the problem, as Nick Pope, Fabian Scher, Dan Burn and Bruno took it in turns to inject more mayhem into that rear guard, and it was already pretty alarming.
Yeah, I mean, I think mad axe murderers seems quite strong. But
Halloween, but if
we're talking about Chelsea's second goal, for example, you know, you have misplaced possession in midfield, and then you have Nick Pope making an error of judgment in his positioning possibly, and then suddenly that's a goal.
Yeah.
It is those kind of small margins where Newcastle are failing at the minute. Again, I think there's good sections of the pitch or good sections of matches when Newcastle are getting a lot of things right or looking good, but Eddie Howe said it himself, it's at the two ends of the pitch where things aren't quite right. We've also talked about the difficulties in the middle. So in fact, that's the whole team just being shit, isn't it, if I say that? But no, that's not what I'm trying to say. I think it is like marginal things where Newcastle just aren't quite there.
To sum up everything yesterday, I didn't actually get to see the first half at all because I was travelling down here. And when I switched the match on and started watching it, the first thing that I saw when I switched the match on was our friend Dan miscontrol a pass, panic, chase it, slide on his arse, and then hook a ball up the pitch out for a throw-in. And I thought, all right, okay, it's going to be one of those days.
Yeah, one of my, you know, general criticisms of modern football, it's not just all about yoghurt, as far as I'm concerned, and field tilts. There is also that thing about people playing out from the back unnecessarily. And there were a few times when Newcastle were guilty of doing that. I think when you've got players like Palmer and Nicholas Jackson, you know, there were a couple of times they played out from the back and just immediately put themselves under pressure. I'm not really making a sort of huge point about that because generally speaking, Newcastle sort of do that pretty well. They're capable of being pragmatic and often are pragmatic, but they were, you know, I think they were just terrified by what Palmer could do to them in particular. And once he's done it once, in the back of your mind, he can do it again. And I think that sort of uncertainty spread, but he is also a very special player. You know, it's not as if Newcastle are going to have to play Chelsea again any time. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. When we got some of those passes going in that midfield, though, we did look pretty good. Jacob, you mentioned that Newcastle goal before. It was a slick move, wasn't it? It was featuring two of our ex-Chelsea fullbacks as well and rounded off by Alexander Isak. It was good to see him back on the score sheet after a difficult week last week.
Yeah, and it's actually probably the one time when playing out from the back worked really, really well. I mean, it started with Cher stuck in a coffin corner at the back, and you're thinking, oh, he's just going to clear
it. Jacob's going to take Chris's role here of describing the goal in great detail for us. So
no, but someone needs to do that because, yeah.
It's the one good thing yesterday, no?
It wasn't the one good thing. I'd say it was...
Finally, it's the best thing yesterday.
Yes, it was. It was a lovely movement, yeah.
It's the clearest positive.
Let's have it then. Let's get settled in. Come on.
Passed it up the line, sort of looked kind of speculative towards Almiron. It's a quick sort of rat-a-tat-tat with Livramento, who then cuts infield, plays the ball inside with Guimaraes and then carries on his run, because I think Tonali's dropped back to the right-back sort of zone, so that Livramento just then has licence to go. He carries on. Jolinton does a really, really good turn out of pressure to beat both, I think it's Lavia and Caicedo, which means Newcastle have a big overlap on the left-hand side. Livramento passes it on to Barnes. Barnes sort of cuts in slightly and allows Hall to overlap round to the left. It was Hall's first game back at Stamford Bridge since leaving it. Hall crosses in. Alexander Isak just about keeps himself onside. Ball goes in the net.
It was like being there, wasn't it, George? Oh,
yeah.
Paints pictures.
It was like being there. I think that was Hall's first Premier League assist as well. And he's in good nick, which is encouraging. But it was a beautiful move. I mean, in some ways, this is what I say about it not all being bad. I'm going to surprise everybody, including myself, by making an XG point, which is that since that Fulham game, when they lost and lost badly, Newcastle have had a better XG than all of the teams they've played against, and that includes Man City. I mean, I'm prepared to be contradicted if that's wrong, and there's a really good chance that I am totally wrong on that, but I'm going to speak with the conviction as if it's true. I think that's true. And so, you know, Newcastle, I do think Newcastle are playing better than their results are showing, and they are now playing better than they were at the start of the season. I do think that. But there was something just not there that means that we're seeing this sort of awful patchiness in the team, and we're not seeing consistency within matches. So that's the thing that's missing to me. It's still that kind of complete performance. And it was a great goal, but Newcastle had other big chances to score goals, and they didn't take them. And that is becoming a huge problem. It was Newcastle's first goal from open play for, well, since the days of the Bible, I think.
Feels like that.
470 minutes.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
The commentator on Match of the Day, I believe it was Guy Mowbray, said of the equaliser. Sorry,
I was agreeing with you in a nice, fluent, conversational way that didn't involve you having to then stop this podcast.
Okay, I'll do that again. You can agree again, and this time we'll make it sound like we know what we're doing. How about that?
Great.
The commentator on Match of the Day, who I believe was Guy Mowbray, George, is that right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was Guy Mowbray, yes, I can confirm.
He said of the equaliser, Eddie Howe will feel that's the least his team have deserved from what they've given to the game so far. Jacob, I wasn't sure about that when he said that at the time.
No, I disagree. It's totally out of the blue. Newcastle were doing fine, but they're very much second best.
It wasn't as out of the blue as Brighton scoring against
Newcastle.
No, it wasn't
Newcastle that out of the blue, was it?
Yeah. In the previous game. So hang on, how definition of blue? What's that?
Out of the mauve?
Mm. Mauve.
Out of the... What?
Turquoise?
No.
The question we really need to answer is, if you are expected to score, are you coming from the green? Like, what colour signifies... Okay. Being ready to go, because then we hit the halfway house.
You've probably invented something there, Jacob, which...
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're just getting a message from... Yeah.
Let's move on. This is nonsense. Move on.
I'd eat orchid.
The interval and a chance to take a deep breath and reorganise and carefully map out how we're going to let Cole Palmer score 73 seconds into the second half. We talked about this at the top, George. You cannot give players that are that good that much space.
No, Isak dallies on the ball. the ball comes to Palmer, and I think once he's got the ball, you think this is going to be a goal. You know, I think that's just the form that he's in, and that's also the form that Newcastle are in. And, you know, Fabian Scher backs off. He is in so much space, Palmer. I can understand that backing off to an extent, because Scher had sort of had kind of dived in for that first goal and then been left for dead. So you can sort of see why he's doing it, but he's not put
Nick Pope do better as well?
Yeah, he's beaten on his near post. He won't be happy with that, but the ball was struck absolutely perfectly and, you know, then becomes very, very difficult. But yeah, I think you've got two mistakes. You've got Isak dallying on the ball, you've got Pope beaten at the near post, and that's that, game over.
Another nightmare for Alexander Isak. He left Fofana sprawling to go clear, and he fails to slot the ball home or find a teammate. Joe Linton did not look happy at all. The goal was at his mercy, and despite the goal, his form is still a bit of a concern, Jacob, isn't he? We're short of that cutting edge.
Yeah, I was very exasperated on the touchline just in front of us when that ball wasn't square, because it's the sort of finish which we're so used to seeing Isak kind of make look really easy,
yeah.
As in he's sort of got one person to beat and just sort of does, I don't know, drags it over with his studs and just sort of whacks it into the roof of a net or something. And it just all looked as if he was having to think about it much more, which for Isak is probably a sign that he's not in top form. I mean, Gillinton was there. I mean, I do actually think that if he did square it, the pace he'd have to have played the pass, it probably wouldn't have been a super easy finish. I think we're maybe acting like it's tapping when it wasn't. But clearly it was a chance which Newcastle should have scored from.
And he did so much right in that build up.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. But you know, Isak last season was Cole Palmer. I mean, it's like you can reverse their positions. If Isak gets that ball in that position last season, you think he goes on to score or goes on to find a pass. That lack of confidence means a millisecond delay in your own thought process, and then the chance is gone. That's what happens in the Premier League, and we're seeing this time and time again with Newcastle at the moment. It's a lack of confidence. That then means a percentage or two dip. It means a millisecond hesitation. What came so natural, or what comes so natural when you're playing well and in good form, deserts you, and you don't get the chance, and that's what's costing Newcastle.
Chelsea had a penalty as well. Dan Burn and Kunku, penalty decision was overturned by VAR. We've actually benefited from one or two of those recently. Probably correct, Jacob, you said in your match report. It didn't seem like one that would get reversed, perhaps.
I'm glad it wasn't awarded as a penalty, seeing as it was minimal contact. But
yeah.
I think seeing as what actually, I mean, Nkunku got the ball, he tried to turn direction, and Burn did grab onto his shoulder lightly, and it's soft, but you aren't allowed to do that, and which was meant, I thought, that seeing as that contact was there, I didn't think they'd actually flip it, but I'm quite glad they did, because it probably wasn't enough for Nkunku to go down the way he did.
If you give that as a penalty, you give every single contact as a penalty. I'm so pleased that one was overturned, and I think And Kunku should have been booked for diving. I think it was a dive.
Sean Longstaff was booked for arguing, wasn't he? The same incident.
Yeah, and that doesn't get overturned.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly soft as a decision in the first place, and I know, you know, there's supposed to be a high bar for those things being overturned. I'm delighted that was, because I just thought that was rubbish.
There was more Newcastle possession and territory in the last few minutes, but no penetration. And if we're being completely brutal here, they looked a little bit short of ideas, Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've been speaking about actually before recording, was just kind of Newcastle's patterns of play and kind of what their real attacking identity is now. And obviously a couple of seasons ago, that intricate work on the right. I think when Gordon's there, they kind of managed to manufacture options to sort of spring him in behind. I didn't really have any of that. It felt like maybe they're trying to turn a man in midfield and play a ball through, but that's not an attacking identity. That's just sort of trying to get your midfielder to do something good.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think they're sort of found, because Chelsea, although they are still trying to get defensive solidity, it's still a defence which is probably worth, what, 500 million? It's probably not going to quite do it. You have to sort of produce a really good chance. They did for the first goal. They produced a good chance to do it with Isak later, but it probably wasn't there consistently.
There was that Isak header as well, wasn't there?
Yes.
Before he ran, and just, you know, he's completely unmarked. Ball comes in, and there's just no power on it whatsoever. Again, I think
it's down, doesn't he?
Yeah, he heads. Yeah, and Again, I think Isak in top form, that's a goal. I mean, I know Heading's not as necessarily a strong point, but I think that's a goal. And again, I think that's the difference at the moment. I'm not trying to say everything's all sweetness and light, but I do think that there is a lack of confidence that's affecting those big moments.
Yeah, and as Eddie Howe said afterwards, just that final bit at both ends in both boxes. Sometimes you go through those moments when you're lacking confidence. We'll continue to try and attack games.
It's like he's just heard what I've just said, except 24 hours ago.
It is, isn't it?
Amazing.
I know.
Maybe it's because I've read that, and then that's what I'm saying. Yeah, no, I prefer to think he's taken his inspiration from me just 24 hours ago.
I'm sure that's what it was. And Eddie said at the end there, we're going to try and attack games and attack teams. He obviously wants Newcastle to be progressive and on the front foot, but some fans are asking for a change in approach and a change in direction, aren't they?
Well, of course, because Newcastle are going through a spell without winning games, and that's understandable. And you see those sort of inevitable calls for a plan B. I'm not sure that a sort of change in formation is there for Newcastle at the minute. I mean, they haven't got the personnel to go to an attack. You know, you can't do what you do when Wilson is available and put Isak out wide. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with the game plan. I think it's confidence. And it's individual errors at the minute that is the problem for me. Newcastle have had great success playing in the way they do, and that's the way they've built their team and built their squad. So I don't think you throw it out of the window. I don't think, I just don't look at that game on Sunday. I don't look at the game against Brighton and think that it's panic stations, because that's just not the way Newcastle are playing. It's not as if they're not creating chances. They're just not putting them away. So you just have to sort of hope that turns.
Newcastle need to bust a few ghosts now, Jacob, don't they, on Wednesday night? That's a huge game now, isn't it?
Yeah, particularly because, 12th in the league now after 9 games. It's still close enough that you'll be able to potentially drag himself back up into Europe. But increasingly, his chance for it to be a successful season, there needs to be a cup run. And Newcastle have generally done well in the Carabao Cup under Eddie Howe. I mean, last year, we'll see another ghost against Chelsea. But at home, possibly an air from Chelsea of sort of, this might be job done after the weekend and it'll be a different game at St James's Park. Chelsea will probably rotate. They made 11 changes last week against Panathinaikos in midweek. There's an opportunity there still.
Talking about rotating and making changes, one of the sort of extraordinary things about Chelsea this season, we know about the enormous size of their squad and the amount of money they've spent. Cole Palmer is not in Chelsea's Conference League squad. He's just been left out of the squad.
It's mad, isn't it?
Because they have so many players. I mean, that is astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing.
And just leave best player out. That's incredible.
Yeah, just leave it. And I might have got the actual number wrong, but I think Sky said yesterday that 7 of the team that played against Newcastle hadn't gone on their last European trip, so they could just leave them. So they don't have the tiredness of travelling. And again, I'm not looking to make excuses. The way Chelsea have done things is bizarre in lots of cases, and I think wrong in plenty of cases in terms of, all these, 9-year contracts and things like that. But the resources they have compared to Newcastle's is still astonishing. I mean, Newcastle's squad is the squad you see on match day, and that's it. I mean, Howe selects the players he has available, and that's that. I mean, there's no fat on in that meat. Oh, I've become Chris Wolf. It's like he's not leaving players out of his matchday squad. It's all there. And yeah, for Chelsea, it's a completely different story. Astonishing, really.
You'd hope it would be a different game at St James's Park in the Cup on Wednesday. The dynamics will inevitably be different, George. Are we feeling a bit more confident with this?
No, I mean, I can't say I feel confident after this run. It's got the defeatist Newcastle fan in me right back to the fore. I mean, I didn't think Newcastle would get anything out of yesterday's game beforehand. So that's just how I'm feeling. I think that lack of confidence is probably infecting all of us. I think that's just how it goes. I do agree. I think it's with your previous question to Jacob, I think it's a massive game. I think Newcastle need to respond. This is, if we're being, absolutely brutally honest about it, this is the one competition that Newcastle can realistically win. They're not out of the FA Cup yet. I'm not saying that they can't win that, but this is the one where they do have a chance, where the big teams, you see, you know, what Manchester City are probably going to do in the League Cup. They're going to play kids in this. This is the one chance, without being in Europe, that Newcastle really have to take advantage. And the one thing that I would be hopeful about is that however many changes Howe makes for the match, that it will be a more recognisable and, fingers crossed, coherent team than Chelsea's. It's just that Chelsea have those incredible resources we've talked about. So whoever plays for them, it's going to be a good team, you'd think.
And as we've heard this week as well, Callum Wilson won't be involved. He's probably going to miss another 3 weeks or so, according to Eddie Howe. Is there any other fitness news, George? We maybe expect somebody like Lewis Miley to come into the team?
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Howe does his press conference on Tuesday morning, so we don't have any sort of great updates. We know that Anthony Gordon is having a scan on the injury that kept him out against Chelsea. That's obviously not great. That suggests that he's not going to be fit for Wednesday. Obviously, it's Arsenal at the weekend as well. We'll have to wait and see on that one. Still no Wilson, slight setback there. But yeah, Lewis Miley, he's been on the bench for the last couple of matches and hasn't been used. There is, again, a sense of excitement about him coming back into the team. Chris and I have written about him. It's been a long time coming, this piece we've written. We were sort of working on a big background piece, and then he got injured towards the end of last season, has been out ever since then, had another injury in pre-season. And the language they're using about him at Newcastle is really interesting and kind of funny in some ways. But like, somebody that we spoke to on the coaching side of it talked about him looking beautiful.
Wow.
Beautiful as an athlete. He's filled out in his upper body.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
He still looks like a baby. And, I mean, we can't talk about 17-year-old Lewis Miley anymore because he is now 18. He can vote. He can drink legally. Yeah, and all of those.
He can play Call
things.
Of Duty if he wants.
He can play Call of Duty. But they have missed the way that he plays. And, again, I would obviously love people to read the piece, but he's compared to a Manchester City player, not in a direct comparison with Rodri, but somebody who has great intelligence on the ball and then can deliver it. And it's quite rare that you get the two things, that you get that sort of, you know, that you get that intelligence as a footballer and also the ability to deliver it. And Miley does it. Now, I'm not wanting to put pressure on him with that. They're not, you know, it's not a direct comparison as players, but that quality. And I think Newcastle, they don't have somebody else who can do what Miley does. So I would love to see him get some time on the pitch. Maybe he could start if fit. We'll see. But when we're talking about that balance in midfield, or the lack of balance in midfield at the minute, I think any option that there is there to change things around a bit and try something else is obviously good news.
Absolutely, Newcastle need a bit of that at the moment, don't they? Right, let's have a quick break, chaps, and we'll be back in just a moment with a special guest.
Pomplemousse.
Perfect.
All right, we've got a very special guest with us to look ahead to the Arsenal match, and he's waiting in the wings. But just before we welcome him to the show, we need to give Chris Woff a big up for his latest interview. He's been in Bordeaux catching up with Andy Carroll.
Here's Carroll, named as the home team's man of the match. Carroll is crossing the ball to Sisco. Oh, looking for Carroll. Hat-trick moment. Hat-trick for Andy Carroll. Perfection.
Le corner de Diallo frappé. Second poteau dans la zone d'Andy Carroll qui remet de la tête encore une fois au cimetre. Trichard, la montée de Trichard. Le centre au second poteau. Andy Carroll.
Oui.
Oh, 84e minute de jeu. Les Bordelais étaient dans la difficulté depuis une bonne vingtaine de minutes. Et encore une fois, c'est Andy Carroll qui débloque la situation. Andy Carroll qui vient marquer son 4e but en deux matchs. Et Andy Carroll encore une fois, ça passe juste à côté.
Une fois
au 34e et 85e minute, voilà. Andy Carroll, homme du match.
Voilà, deux matchs joués, deux doublés. Voilà, il y a rien d'autre à dire.
Growing up, you say you didn't necessarily see you being here in the future. I mean, if the Andy Carroll of 15-16 looked at where Andy Carroll is now in terms of out in Bordeaux, being Northern France, how would he...
I don't even think I would have thought that far ahead. It's just,
I'd like to still be playing football, which I am now, and that's it. I don't really know where it would have been. Didn't really think that far ahead, to be honest. But being at school doing French, I definitely didn't picture myself being here, that's for sure.
And when you look back now at the Andy Carroll then to the Andy Carroll now, how different or similar a person are you in both ways?
I think, obviously growing up and everything like that, more mature, but I still like to have a laugh. I still like to be a big kid, really, when I can. Serious on the pitch, obviously, and then just try and smile and just enjoy life, really. I think I've been through ups and downs all through my career, and it's just one of them things that happens, but you come out of it and you can either come out of it good or bad, and I think everything that I've been through, I've came out the other side, and I'm loving life and I'm enjoying everything.
And I mean, obviously the move comes to France initially, was last year, the year before, whenever it was. I mean, just talk through that, because it seemed quite abrupt that you left England. Was it sort of a swift move? How did it all come about?
Yeah, I was ready to challenge myself somewhere else, and I just said I need to be abroad. I had a few options in England, a few good options, and I was just like, I think my time in England's come to an end. I'm satisfied with what I've done. I just want to try and challenge myself somewhere else. And then it came up to go over to Amiens, and I was straight there.
In terms of challenging yourself somewhere else, was that partly a mental thing? Was it all about football? What was the sort of thinking behind it?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to just challenge myself. I mean, we've had different managers. I've had foreign managers, different tactics, different styles and different setups, and starting at different times and finishing different times. And I just thought I wanted to challenge myself as just throw myself into a different way of life, and it's not a massive change, you know. It's still football. I'm still going in playing football, but it's still a change. I didn't know anyone, don't speak the language, and I'm just going to go there and give it everything I can and try my best. And it was just something that I wanted to do.
Had you had the opportunity to go abroad early in your career?
No, I hadn't. I think for the last few years I've been thinking about it and thinking, yeah, it would be good, and I would like to go here, there, and stuff like that, but never really it came up. And then it was just a point in my life I just thought, I really, really want to go.
And this move seemed to come about quite quickly. Was it to do with the, because the sporting director from Amiens involved here as well, is that how it came about?
Yeah, spoke to him about it, and I wasn't really playing much in Amiens and as much as I wanted, and back end of last season as well I wasn't, and it was just one of them things where I just wanted to play football. I know it's come to an end, and I want to play as many games as I can. And I've said it before, it's not about the level or anything like that. I just want to play football, enjoy myself and be happy. And playing football is where I'm the happiest. So that's exactly what I wanted to do. I spoke to the manager and straight away I was like, yeah, I think it's something for me.
And were there alternatives, or was this sort of...
Didn't even look. Didn't even ask. There was nothing like that. It was just... let me play football. I can play football. The manager said what he wants, and I was like, yeah, I'd love that and be down here. Obviously, it's a massive club, and it's went down the leagues, but hopefully the team that we've got, we can get back up as soon as possible. And when I looked at the project and the size of the club and everything like that, you know about the club, it's one of them things where I thought I can play football at a massive club and enjoy myself and enjoy my life. And flights back to England aren't... an hour and 10, 15 minutes back home. It's perfect.
And I mean, you mentioned the size of the club. I mean, a little more than a decade ago, they were playing Newcastle in the Europa League as well. I mean, that's the sort of level that they've been at as well.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, looking at the history we were going through the other day and things that they've achieved, it's brilliant. It's massive. I mean, the stadium's fantastic as well. You know, it's and you see here where we are sitting now, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
It's just obviously the rain at the minute. Again, it's like Newcastle.
Yeah,
but it's not as cold. But it's raining obviously today. But it's unbelievable here.
I've seen you say before that you're almost losing money by playing here. What does that actually mean in terms of?
Well, I'm actually spending more money to be here than I am earning. Basically, that's exactly what it is.
I mean, just in terms of
my house is my rent for my house is more money than what I'm getting. That's without eating or driving or flying back home, basically.
Because it's just fascinating, just in terms of that desire to play and to play here. I mean, that's just
When I was at Reading, it was the same. Yeah. When I was at Reading, it was the same. I was playing at Reading. It was my apartment was more than what my my wage was. And that's exactly the same as here. So, I mean, it hasn't just changed yet. It's just for love of playing football. That's exactly what I'm going to do. It's just...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you're in the fortunate position you can do that. But equally, even so, not many people choose to do that.
Yeah, not many. Yeah. I know a lot of people that fall out of love of the game at 30 years old, you know, and they don't enjoy it. And to be honest, when we talk about Newcastle there, that time when I didn't get a club back, I kind of thought, do you know, and then I was like, really? Do I just call it there? Do I finish it? And then when I went to Reading, I was just like, no, why am I even thinking that? That complete not what I want. This is football, what I want. I want to enjoy football. Do you know? And then when I went to West Brom and it was a bit iffy and I was like, yeah, well, it doesn't matter about that because I know I'll enjoy myself at Reading. I know there's somewhere where I'll enjoy football again. And when I went there, I did. I loved it. And that's exactly what it is. It's just... Yeah, just love playing football. I love being happy. Love being out there. I love when the kids talk about it and say to me, "Oh, Dad, did you train well? Did you do this in training?" Or when I go and watch them, say, "Actually, I do that in training." Do you know what you used to do? I love having that bond with my kids as well, where we can talk about it. And I just think it's just great that I can still do that now and not be sitting at home with my feet up and with plenty of time to do that. You know, I just enjoy playing football.
Yes, Andy Carroll, George. Nice to hear from him.
Yeah, fabulous. It's a beautiful interview. I would encourage everyone to read that. I mean, really bizarre. Obviously, you've got this human wrecking ball that we're all very familiar with from a Newcastle point of view. Now playing a trade in the fourth tier of French football. And his favourite French word is pamplemousse, which he can't speak French at all, apart from bonjour and pamplemousse, which I think would, surely that can get you out of any bit of trouble just, in France, pamplemousse.
That's it, just say
bonjour.
That and you're fine, you're completely fine. Right then, well, now we can welcome our guest, as well as look ahead with a fair dose of anxiety to that Arsenal game next week. He's a big name stand-up comedian, comedy store regular, but perhaps more importantly to us, he's a massive gunner and host of the Athletic Arsenal podcast. The excellent Handbrake Off. It's a massive pod on the Tyne. Welcome to Ian Stone. Ian, hello.
Nice to see you, chaps. How are you?
Yeah, not bad at all. Are you well?
Yep. Yeah, by the way, I am well, yeah. Pamplemousse. First of all, I always thought it was pamplemousse, right? But I'm obviously reading it in English, you know. But isn't it grapefruit? Is that what it is? Isn't that what a pamplemousse is?
It is.
Right, okay. It's one of the few words I remember from the French lessons about 1,000 years ago.
They can't spell bananas right either. They miss the B off the front. And they're rubbish over there. They taste like pineapples. They're rubbish. Right. Fond memories of Andy Carroll, Ian?
Well, it's funny, right, because you texted me to say you're going to talk about this 2010 goal that he scored. I have no recollection of that as well. Was it some...
No memory of it.
I don't know. Did he just batter his way through the defence and score a goal like he did?
Just imagine an Andy Carroll goal. Just imagine an Andy Carroll goal and you're there. That's what it was. Big ball in the box. He comes through.
When he was fit, unstoppable. I mean, unstoppable, unplayable.
Yeah.
He scored a hat-trick against us for West Ham, I think it was, and we got away with a 3-3 draw. But you just went, what do you do with this bloke? But never fit for that long, was he?
No, and it's that unfortunate combination of unplayable versus non-playable, and that was it. Like, when he was on form, and particularly in those early days at Newcastle, you just looked at him and thought, he could do anything and be anything, but that body shape, it's just so unusual. But, yeah, a slight case of what might have been, because on his day, you've seen nothing like him, really.
Also, Newcastle forwards as well, that you do sort of, there's a lot of weight on them, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
It's like that. Was he wearing the number 9? I guess he was.
He would have been, yeah.
Yeah, he got it, I think, in the Championship season under Chris Hughton, I think I'm right in saying.
See, I mean, for older listeners will remember Malcolm McDonald. And now, you know, we had him for a while, that sort of, you know, almost pigeon chest of his and the way, and he scored a hat-trick against you lot, actually, in a 5-3 on a like freezing cold Tuesday night in about 1975 or something like that.
Well, how come you can remember that and not Andy Carroll scoring a goal in 2010? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, it makes every sense if you think that Malcolm McDonald scored those goals for us, George, is in fact the way it works.
Yeah, good point. Checkmate.
There've been one or two fiery encounters over the years, Ian, haven't there? Our mate Alan from work scored a penalty in one at Highbury, and Ray Parler and Craig Bellamy were both sent off that day. Do you remember that one?
I mean, Craig Bellamy getting sent off is not, I mean, it's, you know, an empty room. that really, the ones I remember, do you know what? I was sort of a half joking about the fact that I can only remember the ones where it went well for us. But I remember a 7-3 at the Emirates when Theo Walcott sort of got up.
Remember that?
Got fouled, got up, yeah, and ran on and scored. And I do remember something. I remember the 1-0. A couple of seasons ago. In fact, I remember a few.
Come on!
I remember a few of the games, actually. I remember the game when you absolutely battered us for 20 minutes, and I thought, oh my God, we're going to get killed here. And we ended up winning 2-0.
Of course, the 4-4 at St James's Park as well.
And the 4-4 as well, yeah, with 4-4. When a friend of mine actually threw his radio out of a window, okay, just to let you know. Yeah.
Brilliant. So many Newcastle fans left that day as well. Kept in touch with someone. We all remember Dennis Bergkamp as well.
And Dennis Bergkamp. That's right, Dennis Bergkamp scoring that goal. So, which I heard somebody ridiculously say was a foul on Dabusas, right? And you just go, "Oh, stop it, will you?" I mean, it was a strong hand.
He didn't mean it, though, did he? Didn't mean it. It was a fluke.
Yeah. Well, do you honestly think that?
No, I've read his book, so I know exactly that he meant it. 100%. Yeah.
Well, you know, I like the way he talked about that. Actually, the way he said that he didn't know it was exactly going to go like that. But he had the idea in his head that he would flick it round. It was Dabusas, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and,
it was.
And then do what he did. But, you know, he was a genius. He was at the Emirates yesterday, actually, for the Liverpool game. And it was very, very lovely to see him. I mean, there's a general appreciation. He's one of the greatest players we ever had. And so we're happy to see him.
I'd eat war, kid.
You obviously want to talk about the 1-0 and Joe Willock and
yeah. On the subject of great comedy, I just think that have you kind of discovered your collective sense of humour yet about that match? Because let's be honest, it was one of the fucking funniest things that I've ever seen and witnessed. Not just the moment of it, but then the fume that it's like caused since then. And I don't mean that with any offence. It's just hilarious.
Sorry, you cut out there for a bit and I completely lost everything you said. Should we just move on from whatever it was? No.
Totally fine.
No, I haven't. No. A sense of humour about it. I mean, what is funny? What was funny? I actually watched a clip the other day of Gary Neville with the ball, where the ball was, and he was explaining the camera angles and how they can't. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I don't need to hear this. I genuinely don't need to hear this. I thought it was a push on Gabriel, is what I thought. But anyway, it wasn't given, and we lost, and it hurt. It really hurt. And obviously, I understand that the opposition fans get a particular kick out of watching Mikel Arteta losing it on the touchline. Yeah. But let me tell you, every Arsenal fan was with him that day, and it hurt.
Yeah.
And so to go there last season and beat you was gave us tremendous pleasure. And my son, it's very hard to get away game tickets. I imagine it's the same for Newcastle as well.
Yeah.
It's really a joy to go to away games. My son went the away game last year and he was on Match of the Day smiling and there was a picture of him. And I was so glad he had that experience. Because I said to him, there is nothing, and this is, and again, no offence meant, but I said there is nothing like going up north and nicking points off, whether it's Manchester or Liverpool or Newcastle, and then sort of getting out of Dodge afterwards.
It's funny because there has been a bit of like feistiness between the two teams. I mean, I know it's not one of the great rivalries or anything from it, but or anything like it, but. I remember when Newcastle went down to London and got that 0-0 draw.
Oh.
That was, you know, Newcastle
full
chithousery at work in that game. But wasn't it the first game that season that Arsenal hadn't scored in, or something like that? And it felt like a big moment for Newcastle.
That was the first ever Newcastle game I covered. I remember doing it and being like, "Who on earth are this team? Like, what are they doing? They're just getting off trying to pull everyone, boot everyone."
Got a result. I mean, they were, that was the first team to stop us playing that year. We had that. That was that dream year when we suddenly went, oh, hello, who the hell are these? And we were just beating everyone 2-3-4. And then Newcastle came and the ball was in play for about 10 minutes total or something like that. And I might be slightly exaggerating. And yeah, Newcastle, it was full shithousery. And we hated you for it. But that's the game, right?
Sorry, I was going to say, I remember Bukayo Saka against Dan Burn that day and just thinking, oh my God, it's going to be one of those days. He's some player, him, isn't he?
Well, the first 5 minutes, I thought Bukayo would have him on toast, but actually Dan Burn recovered quite well, and that was a hell of a battle.
It was, and
Bukayo Saka is genius, and I mean, again, yesterday he comes on, we're thinking, he starts the game, is he totally fit? And then Ben White plays his beautiful ball over the top, and he sprints past Andrew Robertson, cuts inside and buries it.
Yeah.
And you went, oh yeah, there he is. But the thing is, he does it all the time.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain thing as well. I'm sure you get this with the players who've come through the academy. Bukayo Saka has been with us since he was 8 years old. You know, he's as much of a fan as we are, and of course we absolutely love him. And why not? And a splendid chap as well.
His dad's a big Newcastle fan.
Yeah, apparently so. I've heard this. But, you know, I think Bukayo is one of ours. I mean, it doesn't mean he'll be there forever, but we hope he is.
We'll bring him home one day. You never know. All of this, Ian, is quite obviously a deflect from the fact that you're very good. You'll probably beat us at the weekend, but it's at our place. We're always a bit dangerous at St James's Park, but we really hate that lunchtime kickoff on a Saturday.
Is it at 12:30?
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, time. I mean, I do sometimes feel for you guys. You often seem to have Brighton away in the cup. And it's 12:30 on a Saturday, and I think, well, they must have left about 3 a.m.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get down there. And it is, obviously, the FA couldn't give a shit about, you know, the fans anyway, or the Premier League, whatever. But, I'm glad it's at 12:30 because I sort of feel like the atmosphere maybe not quite as raw as it would be if it was 5:30 in the afternoon.
We tend to get up for those games on a tea time on a Saturday a bit more than we do the 12:30s. I can't imagine why.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. So, no, that suits us. We know we're in for a tough game. It's always hard to go there. I mean, you still have a decent record. And if we can get away, we need a win, but it's not easy. You know, you got a draw against City the other day. I'm not saying I'll take a draw. I want us to win. But we've got a lot of injuries at the moment. So let's see what sort of team we can put out.
What is the sort of general feeling around Arsenal this season? Obviously, you know, gone second a couple of times to this exceptional Man City team. I know there's a small gap in at the top of the Premier League at the minute, but do you have that feeling that this should be your season?
I think injuries are going to play a massive part. You know, our defence yesterday was decimated, really. Gabriel limped off, and hopefully that's not serious. I think last season we had almost a perfect season without any injuries, and we still couldn't get over the line. What's the feeling? It depends. Sometimes you listen to Talk Sport and you get people going, oh, Arteta will never win us a trophy, he's got to go. And you think, you people are mad. I mean, you're absolutely demented.
We have our fair share of that. Don't worry.
All football clubs do, right? And I mean, I heard some guy actually, by the way, talking about your club, talking about how Jason Tindall's taken over and he's shoved Eddie Howe out the way. I saw him shove him and that's wrong. And it's really starting to upset Newcastle fans. And I was laughing, the thought that Eddie Howe would actually allow that to happen, right? Where he's got him hostage or something.
Jason Tindall can do what he wants. I mean, I think he was given freedom of the city. I mean, not officially.
Yeah.
But Jason Tindall can do what the fuck he wants.
Well,
I mean, that was part of his contract.
Freedom of the key side is what he's got.
Newcastle. And he's got leeway to do whatever he likes.
Right, it's a special line in the contract.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, so you obviously, we all, our clubs have mad fans who are ranting on about this and that. But the general feeling around the Emirates is good because this is the best team we've had in a long time, probably since the Invincibles. We've got a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And I think on our day we can beat anyone. We were unlucky not to beat Man City the other day. Yeah, we're really good and we're loving it.
Both teams are playing on Wednesday night as well, Ian, but you'd probably rather have Preston than Chelsea, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that is hard for you. I know. Chelsea are really good at the moment. Plus, their reserve team is just another 11 exactly. first-teamers, isn't it, really? Because they've got a squad of 75. Yeah. I mean, in fact, most of them, you know, the huge migrations across Europe are Chelsea players on loan at various clubs, I believe, at the moment. Yeah, we'd rather have Preston. Preston should not be taken lightly. They're a half-decent championship team, and we will be playing a reserve team. But you know what? The reserves, the second team as we got include Oleksandr Zinchenko, Gabriel Jesus, Raheem Sterling. We, you know, some players who should be able to have enough about them to beat a team like Preston. We got knocked out of the domestic cups a bit early last year, so I'm glad we got a half decent draw, and hopefully we'll do the business.
And you're not just here to tell us how good Arsenal are. Obviously, you're on tour as well at the minute. Do you want to tell us about that? And when are you coming up to Newcastle?
I am in Newcastle on the 16th of November. I'm at the Stan Comedy Club.
Brilliant.
I mean, I love coming up. I don't come up as much. I used to do regular gigs in Newcastle quite regularly. Oh, regular gigs quite regularly. Listen to me. Talks for a living. but I used to do them quite often. And I haven't been up in a while, but I wrote this Edinburgh show and it seemed to go quite well. Essentially, I didn't lose money, and so I thought, right, I'll take it on tour, and I'm coming up to the Toon on the 16th of November for an afternoon gig, and it was a bit of a risk, because obviously there was a possibility that Newcastle have a 4:30, and it would decimate, but as it turned out, I think it might be international break week, because I'm so glad we got another one of them.
Yeah, there's no game that Saturday, that's right, yeah.
It's the Saturday, isn't it?
Saturday the 16th,
yeah. Yeah, 16th, so, I'm coming up to... coming up to do that, and I'm very much looking forward to it. I've been sort of going around the country talking shit, and people seem to like it. When I say talking shit, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, you understand. So I'm having a good time.
Great stuff. Right then, that's just about it. Thank you so much for your time, Ian. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, and you're welcome back anytime, of course.
Well, if we beat you, I'll come on Monday. If
you're not welcome back there, no, you can fuck off.
No, you're not welcome. You're not welcome. Not football fans. Not welcome.
Excellent. Nice to speak to you, lads.
All right, there we go. Lovely stuff, Ian Stone there, George. Great fun. That's it.
It really is.
That's it for today.
Yeah, I can confirm it is nearly it. I think that's it. I think we're done. I think we're done for business. I think we're closed for business, Taylor.
Put on the timers, closed for business. Yeah, get in touch, those of you out there listening. Keep the messages coming in. Email, tweet, Blue Sky, voice note, carrier pigeon, smoke signals, all the rest of it. Of course, the address, as always, podonthetine@theathletic.com. Thank you very much, Jacob Whitehead, for your time.
See you.
And thank you very much, George Corgan.
You're very welcome. Yeah, send us some voice notes, you miserable buggers. We've been asking you for ages to do this, and you're not doing it. So we want to hear your voice on your podcast. I mean, I say your podcast, it's very much my podcast. The George Corgan Show. But come on, send us some voice notes. We want to hear your voice. So do that for us, please. Thank you.
I'm waiting for somebody to accidentally send us their shopping list for the
week. That would be quite funny, wouldn't it?
Yes, a Wednesday night voice note after a Carabao Cup win against Chelsea would be a great time to get in touch with us. So please do that. Right then, thank you very much for listening to all of you out there. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, have a smashing week. Have a lovely weekend. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Sorry, I think someone's drilling in the room behind me. How much can you hear that, Ollie? Yeah, sorry, this drilling's getting ridiculous. Just now it's gone off new. It might be better to just go to George for this one while this is going on. If that's all right.
Okay, well, no, come to me with that if you want. Yeah.
Let me try and bang. I might quickly run to the other end of the office. I'll just mute myself and warp. I'll be somewhere else in 2 minutes.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Thanks, boys. See you soon. Nice to meet you.
Cheers, Ian.
Take it easy.
All right. Take it. Have a shit weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Cheers, you too.